Ezekiel's Fire, The Great Solar Cataclysm Straight Out of Prophecy by John Little. Copyright 2022. Narrated by the author. The Sun. The Sun. Big, massive, bright. Some worshipped it, some cursed it, and a few have spent their lives studying how it works. It's so complex that predicting what it will do is extremely difficult, if not impossible. Oh, and we've spent billions of dollars studying it. Why so much money? Well, for all of its benefits, we have discovered the hard way that it's also a threat. Back in 1859, our sun sent out a solar flare that melted telegraph lines and burned down telegraph offices. It created magnificent auroras across our night sky and led to consternation and bewilderment among scientists. And some thought the end was nigh. Then when Apollo missions landed on the moon, American astronauts found lots and lots of glass, and some of it looked like it was created by a nova event or a superflare. Superflares? Nova event? No way, shouted the scientific community. So Dr. Gold's observation was consigned to the dusty back shelves of NASA. He never talked about it again. Then a soft-spoken Japanese astrophysicist noticed superflares coming from stars just like our own. The scientific community couldn't shout Dr. Kazunari Shibata down since the evidence was utterly conclusive. So they didn't try. They just ignored him. But he kept doing research and publishing papers. Eventually, some solar astrophysicists started to take notice of Dr. Shibata's work and began to agree that the sun could launch massive superflares. They just weren't sure when such an event would occur, so they went back to their solar telescopes and continued counting sunspots. They decided that this would happen far in the future, so Dr. Shibata's work is slowly being confined to the dusty back shelves. However, the glass on the moon is still there, and new scientists have been observing nova events in our galaxy that do not conform to the accepted explanation for how and why stars explode. They've also seen hundreds of stars disappearing. Some stars are even flashing brightly and ejecting clouds of dust, in much the same way that is described in the Bible. Unfortunately, since most astrophysicists don't understand how this is possible, they scoff at the idea that our sun can produce such massive amounts of energy, enough energy to melt rocks on the moon. And they also don't see how our sun could eject such a massive amount of dust out into our solar system that would darken the sun, turn the moon blood red, and cause stars to vanish. Unfortunately, they're wrong. But before getting into that, let's take a closer look at our sun. Our sun. Compared to the little ball of rock that we call Earth, our sun is ginormous, really big. So big that if you ever wanted to feel insignificant, look at the sun. But is our sun really all that special? Well, it's not just special, it's perfect. The perfect size, the perfect rotation, the perfect brightness. Perfect, that is, for sustaining life. And of all the stars in our universe that we can see, we have only found a few that are just like our sun. Maybe just 10% of all stars in the universe are that special G-class star like our own. And of this special class, an even smaller number are the kinder, gentler, solar-type star. And as we look more closely at how unique our sun is, you'll see God's hand in all of what we are talking about. Yes, God could have created the universe differently, but it's hard to see how you and I could be alive if he did. According to the scientific evidence that we know, every planet and star has been precisely placed to make sure that life on our little ball of rock flourishes. If our sun was brighter, dimmer, bigger, or smaller, the perfect balance of life on Earth would be impossible. Even the rotation of our sun is important. If it was more energetic and rotated much faster than the current 27 days, we would have far more solar flares and bigger ones. If it rotated more slowly, we would have more cosmic rays from other stars hitting Earth and fewer, weaker solar flares. And all of that is because our sun is like a giant kitchen magnet. Our sun, the giant kitchen magnet. Our sun is a super hot ball of protons, neutrons, and electrons swirling about under extremely high pressure. That subatomic soup of energetic particles is called plasma, and plasma creates magnetic fields. And since the sun is just a ball of swirling, whirling magnetic plasma, it means that magnetic fields are everywhere. Magnetic fields just like the one your kitchen magnet uses to hold up notes on your refrigerator. However, the biggest magnetic field created by the sun comes from something that we like to call the solar dynamo. We've never seen it, but we know it's there. We know that it's responsible for the north and south pole on our sun. We know that the north and south poles flip every 11 years. We just don't know for sure if it works the way that we think it works. All of that conspires together to create something called the heliosphere. Helio comes from the Greek word for sun, helios, and the heliosphere is the magnetic field created by the sun and the solar wind, the protons, electrons, and alpha particles ejected by the sun out into the solar system. It's also the outermost layer of the sun's atmosphere. So think of our planet as floating through the outer atmosphere of our star. Also, don't forget that the north and south pole flip, something that our sun does every 11 years. That flip plays a big role in something that we call solar variation, or the solar cycle. If this 11-year cycle was longer or shorter, the climate cycles on Earth would have been deeply affected, leading to a significantly different human history. The warming periods that led to the rise of empires would have happened at different times and locations. Here's an interesting video that does a reasonably good job of describing some of the basics about our sun. It's a YouTube video called The Sun, Crash Course Astronomy, number 10. Fun fact, a cup of protons would be the strongest possible acid if you could keep all those protons in a cup. So think of the core of the sun as being super acidic, as if that matters. All of that is the official version of how we believe the sun works. Of course, the age of the sun and how long it takes for light to reach the surface is pure theory. Scientists don't know who God is, so they aren't going to know how the universe can be 6,000 years old. But there are other theories, like what's at the center of the sun and how the corona can be hotter than the sun's interior, are actually based on some pretty good observations. However, notice something important. Solar magnetism. There's a lot of it. It's powerful. It causes ginormous explosions of energy from the sun, and it will be the number two cause for why Ezekiel's fire knocks our civilization down. God is always number one. Unfortunately, our knowledge of the sun is severely limited. We can't get very close, and we even have a hard time looking at it. We can measure what it produces, but looking inside our sun is impossible. This is why it is such a good idea to look at other stars which have the same characteristics as our sun to see what could be in our sun's future. And yes, we're looking at stars like our own, but for all the wrong reasons. Solar superflares. As I mentioned in my introduction, the Kepler Space Telescope was built and launched for the sole purpose of finding planets like ours that might be able to sustain life. And not a single word was said about wanting to know if stars like our sun have a tendency to emit civilization-killing flares. And it took almost 3 years for someone to have the temerity to mention that Kepler was seeing flares so big that they could only be called superflares. Subsequently, governments around the world realized our danger and spent billions of dollars to launch space telescopes to determine when the next superflare from our sun would happen. Oh wait, they didn't do that. Instead of doing the one thing that would help us understand the likelihood of a superflare destroying us, they decided to waste more money looking for planets orbiting other stars. even if 1,000 years passes before Jesus returns, there is literally no way that humans will ever colonize Mars, let alone planets around other stars. We're just too corrupt, greedy, and foolish to be able to do so. We spent $1 billion looking for planets we'll never touch, from Kepler and TESS and ground observatories, etc. And not a dime on searching for the one thing that will knock us back to the Stone Age. But I'm getting a little ahead of myself. Dr. Kazunari Shibata. When NASA launched the Kepler Space Telescope in 2009, scientists around the world were looking forward to seeing evidence of planets like our own in orbit around stars like our Sun. And they found lots of G-class stars with planets. But what is absolutely astounding was their inability to see undeniable evidence of complete disaster. Even now, when you search for a description of the Kepler Space Telescope, you'll be lucky to see anything about the superflares that it recorded. And we only know about them because a Japanese astronomer at Kyoto University got a bunch of first-year undergrad students to comb through the data. If it weren't for Professor Kazunari Shibata, we would probably still not know that our Sun has the ability to hit us with a solar flare 10,000 times more powerful than the biggest flare ever recorded in human history. But even with conclusive evidence, astrophysicists are still pushing back against the idea that our Sun could destroy our civilization with such a big burst of energy. How is it possible for 99% of astrophysicists to ignore such explosions of light from stars that are exactly like our own Sun? Sheer human stupidity. Before 2012, no astrophysicist was willing to contemplate the ability of our Sun to emit superflares. That's why Dr. Shibata had to use first-year undergraduate students to help him comb through data from the Kepler Space Telescope. Others who could help weren't interested. After all, everyone said that solar superflares were impossible. However, the one thing that made Dr. Shibata unique was his specialization in astrophysical jets, the massive streams of ionized matter ejected out into the universe by black holes, neutron stars, and protostars. And this specialization helped him understand the huge magnetic arcs of plasma on our Sun that lead to solar flares. This led him to wonder if similar stars exhibited the same kinds of flares that he was seeing. Here is a half-hour lecture by Professor Kazunari Shibata in 2019. It's from a YouTube video called Kyoto University International Symposium on Advanced Future Studies, Kazunari Shibata, October 24th, 2019, and you can find a link to the video in the text version of this book. Just after the 6-minute mark, Dr. Shibata says something interesting about the massive amounts of magnetic energy stored in sunspots that often lead to solar flares. Quote, "We know the physics already, but the exact mechanism is still not yet completely solved." Close quote. When he says "not yet completely solved," you should interpret that as "we don't have a clue." And this is the core problem that we are having with solar physics. Since physicists think that certain events are impossible, they won't study them. This means that the burden of finding out how massive amounts of magnetic energy can accumulate on the Sun's surface is in the hands of the very, very few scientists willing to study it. The impact of solar flares on the body. And since this symposium also dealt with astrobiology, Dr. Shibata mentioned something fascinating after the 15-minute mark. He said, quote, "Then in 2008, in an IAU regional meeting in China, I heard a very interesting and strange talk by a Russian researcher. He described that when a solar flare occurred, traffic accidents occurred more frequently and patients' health in hospital became worse, and he proposed heliobiology as a new research subject. And I was very surprised. I immediately asked him why, and he said, flares cause geomagnetic storm of God, then such a disturbance affects the blood because the hemoglobin in blood has iron that is affected by a magnetic field, and then blood pressure may change. So, in traffic, people cannot control their car, and also patients in hospital, their blood pressure changes for worse. Then, amazingly, 1 month later, again in another IAU symposium, one Bulgarian researcher showed this interesting graph, the relationship between blood pressure and geomagnetic storm strength and some positive correlation. And again, I was very surprised. Close quote. The presentation he heard in August of 2008 in China was this one given by Dr. Elchin Babayev, The Sun-Earth Interaction, Potential Effects of Solar Activity and Related Geomagnetic Disturbances on Human Health State on the Earth, Middle Latitudes, Proceedings of the 10th Asian-Pacific Regional IAU Meeting, 2008, from August 3 to 6, 2008, Kunming, Yunnan, China. This was Dr. Babayev's paper published 4 months before, Solar and Geomagnetic Activities and Related Effects on the Human Physiological and Cardio Health State, Some Results of Azerbaijani and Collaborative Studies. Since he was coming from Azerbaijan, Dr. Babayev might not be completely Russian, but he has collaborated with Dr. Vladimir Obritko, who very much is. Potential Effects of Solar and Geomagnetic Variability on Terrestrial Biological Systems. The second symposium that he refers to was focused on universal heliophysical processes and occurred in September 2008 in Ioannina, Greece. This is where he heard Bulgarian researcher Dr. Svetla Dimitrova give this lecture, Possible Heliogeophysical Effects on Human Physiological State. The graph that Dr. Shibata showed in his presentation also appears in this 2006 paper published by Dr. Dimitrova. Relationship between human physiological parameters and geomagnetic variations of solar origin. This is important to note because the Bible also mentions the biological effects of Ezekiel's fire. You can find a verse that directly refers to this here, quote, In that day, says the Lord, I will strike every horse with confusion and its rider with madness. I will open my eyes on the house of Judah and will strike every horse of the peoples with blindness. Close quote. Zechariah 12:4, NKJV. In my chapter on Zechariah, I focus on what happens to the horses. But the biophysical effects of this solar event will result in the madness of those riding them. We will not only see the increase in the brightness from the sun, but will also feel the coronal mass ejection, or CME, when it races past Earth. And for some reason, it will drive us mad. Then near the end of his lecture, he makes some vital points that we will need to reference later. Before his study on superflares, no one believed that stars like our sun could produce them. So in the fall of 2010, he got 5 first-year undergrad students to search the data coming from the Kepler Space Telescope. These students didn't know astronomy, so they were completely free of bias. In that first year, they found 365 superflares coming from 148 solar-type stars. These superflares increased the brightness of these stars by 1% to 10%. And using statistical analysis, they found that a superflare 1,000 times more powerful than the Carrington event would occur once every 5,000 years. Unfortunately, for those of us trying to figure out what Isaiah 30:26 is talking about, an increase in brightness by even 10% is not nearly enough. Isaiah says that the sun will be as bright as 7 days. That's 700% of normal output. Not an additional 10%. But we'll talk about that later. The main point to take away from this lecture is we've only known about superflares from our sun for less than a decade. What else have we missed? I believe that the Bible tells us that they've missed a lot, and one of the things that they've missed is the small nova event described by Isaiah. However, a micronova like this is rare, hard to detect, and even harder to study. Oh, and even if this is just a superflare, when it hits Earth, all electrical systems all over the world will be destroyed. All of them. Not a single electrical grid or power station will be generating electricity anywhere for a very, very long time. Later on, we'll see some videos that give a far more optimistic view, but there's no way that something 1,000 times greater than the Carrington event could leave anything running unless it was protected by something like a Faraday cage. And anything that survives that solar event will be crushed by the earthquake. A longer, more detailed discussion. A few months after that 2019 video, Dr. Shibata received the George Ellery Hale Prize in February of 2020, which is the solar physics prize handed out every year by the American Astronomical Society. And I'm disgusted that he didn't get something better than this. It appears to me to be an, oh, you're retiring, so let's give you a prize. He's not just one of the best solar physicists on the planet. He's the most important solar physicist in 50 years. His discovery that our sun shoots out flares that can be 10,000 times bigger than the Carrington event should have caused a sea change in astrophysics. All the space agencies around the world should have stopped what they were doing and started looking for stars like our own that emit superflares. But because they're morons, they didn't. Here is a talk that Dr. Shibata gave in June of 2020. It's a YouTube video that you can find a link to in the PDF or on the website. It's titled AAS 236, Session 300, Solar Physics Division SPD Hale Prize Lecture from Jets to Superflares. The discussion about superflares begins at the 36 minute and 40 second mark. By that time, Dr. Shibata had already retired, but he still had important things to say, and the core point that you should take away from that talk is that our sun is highly magnetic in a very complex way, and it is magnetic energy that is the source of the massive solar flares that we are concerned about. If you want to know more about what Dr. Shibata is saying, look into solar magnetic plasma and magnetic reconnection. Those two subjects are at the heart of Ezekiel's fire because it will probably be multiple magnetic reconnection events that will involve magnetic plasmas, all of which will explode so massively with such brightness that the outer shell of the sun will be blasted out into the solar system. And for a moment in time, the sun will be as bright as 7 days, Isaiah 30:26, but we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. The reason why Dr. Shibata and his graduate students have been able to understand superflares is due to Dr. Shibata's focus on jets. Not airplanes, but massive streams of energy ejected out into the universe by black holes, neutron stars, and protostars. He thought that these jets were caused by gravitational forces. But to make sure, he looked at our sun. That's when he saw something different. Magnetism. In the 1980s, they discovered spinning jets coming from our sun. Only magnetism could cause these jets of energy to twist like that. So Dr. Shibata started looking more closely at how magnetism was the key component to these astrophysical jets. The problem is that it has taken decades for physicists to come around to this idea. But that didn't keep him from being drawn towards looking at the jets of energy exploding out from the sun, especially solar flares. Up to the early 2000s, many astrophysicists were unwilling to accept magnetism as the reason for what is happening on the sun. Then, solar satellites were launched that could see more clearly how solar flares occurred. Magnetism was proven correct in every way. Then the Kepler Space Telescope was launched in 2009 and a stream of data started flowing in, describing events on and around stars that were like our own. And Dr. Shibata wondered if they could find evidence of flares on these stars too. No one else was looking for this evidence, so he and his students started looking in the fall of 2010. The results? 365 superflares on 148 solar-type stars. Then they did a statistical analysis to try and understand how often such flares would occur on our own sun and at what strength. Here was what they discovered. Superflares, 100 times larger than the Carrington event, occur every 500 years. Meaning, we're toast the next time that happens. Furthermore, we have evidence from 8th century tree rings in Japan and even historical Japanese documents from the 6th century that we had one of those superflares. Yet, at the same time, we still have astrophysicists who are unable to accept the evidence of superflare activity in the past and the surety that a superflare will happen in the future. In fact, it will probably take decades for the scientific community to accept that such solar events are possible. By that time, a superflare will probably have already taken down our civilization. Unfortunately, it's actually a lot worse than that. Much worse. Because we haven't even looked at small nova events. As bad as a superflare would be, a nova event would be worse. And we have evidence that these rare events are occurring in our galaxy. Here's another, much shorter video that does a good job of summarizing some of what we know about superflares in under 3 minutes. It's a YouTube video that you can find the link to in the text version of this book. Its title is Superflares Could Be a Threat to Earth. How ironic that no mention was made of the more comprehensive study done by Dr. Shibata and his team. People just aren't paying attention. But also notice what they say about superflares. 200 years ago, we wouldn't have noticed. Except for an increase in auroras, we wouldn't have noticed a thing. We would have been completely unaffected. The problem with superflares. However, there's a problem with claiming that Ezekiel's fire is a superflare. I used to make that claim, until I realized that superflares don't emit enough visible light to conform to Isaiah 30:26. Any superflare that makes the sun as bright as 7 days would probably kill us. That much directed energy wouldn't just fry everyone on the side of the earth facing the sun, but it would also strip away a lot of our atmosphere. And we have some observations that clarify this. With even the largest known solar flares, the flash of light is never visible to the naked eye. You would need to be looking at the sun through a special telescope to actually see the increase in brightness. The largest solar flare and CME event ever recorded occurred just before noon on September 1, 1859. Amateur astronomers Richard Carrington and Richard Hodgson both had telescopes pointed at the sun. They were recording the shape and size of the sunspots that they were seeing when they suddenly saw a flash of light. Just 17 hours and 36 minutes later, a coronal mass ejection hit Earth, causing telegraph lines to burn and huge auroras to light up the night sky. We call this the Carrington event because Richard Carrington was better able to explain what had occurred, in addition to maybe having more friends in the Royal Astronomical Society than Richard Hodgson. Remember that if you want your name in the history books, who you know is more important than what you know. Here's a fun discussion of solar flares and the Carrington event. It's a YouTube that you can find a link to in the text version of this book. It's titled, Could Solar Storms Destroy Civilization, Solar Flares, and Coronal Mass Ejections? However, notice the optimism. The narrator assumes that our power grids are well managed and that damage can be prevented. Unfortunately, I don't think that we'd get off so easily. But Kurzgesagt has a sense of humor, so they get a pass. Here's a little more history of that Carrington event. It's also a YouTube video that you can find a link to in the text version of this book, and it's titled The Carrington Event, Earth's Electronic Apocalypse. Simon Whistler lays out more of the history of the Carrington event. He even mentions poor Richard Hodgson, who also witnessed the same flash from the sun, but barely got an honorable mention. Simon also asks us to think about what would happen when the power goes out. However, I think that he and many others are missing something important. When complex systems break, rebuilding them only works when the replacement parts are nearby and stockpiled. Big parts that are meticulously hand-built for 18 months on the other side of the planet might not ever arrive. And I'm describing the big transformers that are only made in Asia and are used by every power station on the planet. What if the power grids of both Asia and North America were burned out? Who would build the replacement transformers? How would they get to North America? A really big superflare would kill us. The Carrington event was classified as an X-45 class solar flare. If another such flare would hit Earth, trillions of dollars in damage would result and untold loss of life. It would be absolutely terrible, and we had a close call on July 23, 2012, when the CME of a similar-sized solar flare missed Earth by 9 days. But as with all other recorded solar flares, you could not have seen them without the aid of a telescope. But what if the flare was 10,000 times stronger? Well, if an X-450,000 class solar flare hit us, we'd be dead. The Kepler Space Telescope has recorded such superflares emitted from stars just like our own. But there's a problem with thinking of Ezekiel's fire as a superflare. Why? Because if our sun shot an X-450,000 superflare at us, we would only see the sun as being 30% brighter and not 7 times brighter, and that doesn't fit Isaiah 30:26. Worse, we're not sure how much of Earth could survive such a superflare. It would do more than just knock out all electricity and wipe out our civilization. It would scorch a big part of Earth and even rip away some of our atmosphere. It also might kill so many plants and animals that it's hard to see how anyone would survive. Of course, surviving a superflare would depend on a number of factors, so we're in the area of conjecture here. The irony is that the movie Knowing, starring Nicolas Cage, made such a superflare event the central premise of the movie. That movie came out in 2009, and critics at the time thought that such superflares were impossible. But a couple of years later, Kazunari Shibata proved such a superflare isn't just possible, but inevitable. But is the Bible describing a superflare? No. Even an Earth-killing superflare would not produce enough light to make the sun 7 times brighter and the moon as bright as the sun. The book of Isaiah isn't talking about a flash of light, but a sustained brightness of at least minutes or hours. But there is a way for the sun to appear 7 times brighter without killing everyone on Earth, by launching most of the energy in many other directions than just Earth. A small nova event. This is where we go beyond the current boundaries of science, since no prominent astrophysicist believes that our sun can blow off its outer shell in a nova event, at least not until after it becomes a red giant. Of course, you already know that prominent astrophysicists thought the same thing about superflares, and now we don't. So we should look at novae, plural of nova, especially since we are completely out of other possibilities. Astronomers currently recognize only 2 types of novae. Nova, a white dwarf star, grabs hydrogen from a companion star until the stolen hydrogen ignites and explodes. Supernova, a star that uses up most of its hydrogen, which causes it to expand into a red giant, which then becomes unstable and destroys itself in a ginormous explosion, sometimes leaving behind a neutron star. Yes, they have sub-classifications, but those are just variations on a theme. But there is more in the universe than is explained by their theology or science. And it is all about the one thing that we really don't understand about the sun and stars. Magnetism. Solar flares are caused by magnetism that gets tangled up before exploding. Superflares are caused by similar kinds of magnetism, just bigger ones. Also, a coronal mass ejection, or CME, that usually happens along with a solar flare is also magnetic. The heliosphere that surrounds and protects our solar system is completely magnetic. And none of that should surprise us, since the sun is the biggest kitchen magnet in our solar system. In fact, take a look at how magnetic the sun is. And it's from a YouTube video that you can find the link to in the text version of this book. It's titled The Dynamic Solar Magnetic Field with Introduction. And then there's some extra proof that solar flares are magnetic and that we don't understand why, although this time with a very Scottish accent. It's also from a YouTube video that you can find a link to in the text version of this book. It's titled Solar Flares: How the Sun Relaxes. And if you come away from that video with a Glasgow accent bouncing around in your head, don't say I didn't warn you. Now think carefully about what Dr. Fletcher said. Magnetic fields get tangled and twisted. Those tangles and twists cause energy to build up in the sun, and the more tangled and twisted they are, the more energy held in those magnetic fields. And if there are enough of them scattered across the surface of the sun, and if they all let go at once, you could see how the outer shell of our sun would blast outwards into the solar system. In other words, a nova. However, it wouldn't be like the standard novae and supernovae that we've seen in our telescopes. In fact, this nova might only last for hours. A magnetic nova would also cause our sun to disappear to those looking at us from other stars, assuming that anyone believes in aliens. Why should the sun disappear? Because that outer shell would blast out into space before cooling into a fine dust, blocking the sun's light. Of course, this is where we are having to work extra hard to connect Bible prophecy with the science, but I think that we're still on pretty firm ground. Up to this point, we've been talking about individual solar flares and superflares blasting out small parts of the sun's outer atmosphere, the corona. But a massive buildup of magnetic energy across the sun's surface would do far more than that. Think of a solar flare as a stick of dynamite. If you drill a hole in the side of a limestone cliff and set off that one stick of dynamite, you'll get a big bang and some dust. But if you drill multiple holes and set off multiple sticks of dynamite, the whole face of the cliff would come down, and we would expect the same thing to happen on our sun. So this small nova event, this magnetic micronova, would happen when multiple magnetic fields all around the sun twist, tangle, and gather energy before blowing up all at once. To refresh your memory, here's what the Bible says about that moment in time. Quote, "The light of the moon will be as the light of the sun, and the light of the sun will be sevenfold as the light of 7 days, in the day that the Lord binds up the bruise of his people and heals the stroke of their wound." Close quote, Isaiah 30:26, NKJV. Those of you who have been reading When Gog Comes will know that Isaiah 30 is talking about the same moment in time as Ezekiel 38 and 39, the same as Ezekiel 12 and 13, but it also looks exactly like this verse, quote, "I looked when he opened the sixth seal, and behold, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth of hair, and the moon became like blood. And the stars of heaven fell to the earth as a fig tree drops its late figs when it is shaken by a mighty wind. Then the sky receded as a scroll when it is rolled up, and every mountain and island was moved out of its place." Close quote, Revelation 6, 12-14, NKJV. And yes, I know how hard it is to get your head around that, so if you have trouble accepting that, it's okay. But for the moment, just focus on the sky receding like a scroll when it is rolled up. That rolling up of the sky is that massive shell of dust spreading outwards into the solar system, obscuring the stars in a line as it races by Earth. It would look like someone was wiping the stars away. It would be like one of those massive storm fronts rolling through at night, like the ones that you get in Midwest America. It will be like someone pulling a blanket across the sky. On one side, a vast canopy of stars. On the other, shadow and nothingness. Of course, all of that is what you'd see at night. During the day, you'd see something different. The interesting thing is that we are seeing more and more evidence of this in our galaxy. Vanishing stars. Early in 2020, we saw the light from Betelgeuse drop by 70%. And after much shouting and arm-waving, scientists concluded that it had ejected a massive cloud of dust. This cloud was so big that it obscured part of our view of that star for several months. We also noticed that this star brightened just before that eruption of dust. And while Betelgeuse is a lot different from our own sun, it gives us a possible explanation for the stars that have been disappearing and why Isaiah 30 and Revelation 6 have a sound scientific basis. So we'll need to look for disappearing stars, and just like our discovery of superflares, they're looking for these stars for all the wrong reasons. And I saw this in a video with its link in the text version of this book, and it's titled, Over 700 Stars Mysteriously Vanished in the Last 70 Years, But Why? On July 12, 1950, the Palomar Observatory was photographing the night sky. Two of those pictures overlapped each other and were taken half an hour apart. In the second picture, nine stars had disappeared and have not been seen since. And we still don't know why they're gone. Fast forward 70 years, and we now have the VASCO project, also known as the Vanishing and Appearing Sources During a Century of Observations project, launched by Dr. Beatriz Villarroel of the Nordic Institute for Theoretical Physics, NORDITA. They are looking for stars that have been around for a while and then disappear. As of late 2020, they identified 713 stars that have disappeared, and they want to know why. Although, they want the reason to be aliens. No, really. They're looking for aliens. And they think that really smart aliens would build gigantic structures around stars to harvest energy. But that's crazy, because aliens don't exist. Sorry. As with Betelgeuse, the most likely explanation for the disappearance of these stars is a massive ejection of dust that obscures our ability to see that star. The reason for this vast amount of dust could be anything from a superflare up to a small nova event. But there's a problem with that explanation. Astrophysicists don't know how this could occur on main sequence stars like our own. And what scientists cannot explain, they tend to ignore. Just like they ignored the data that showed stars like our own sun can eject massive superflares. Dr. Shibata was the first to talk about magnetism being the cause, but they are doing their best to ignore him since they don't understand what he said. So I have a suggestion. If a buildup of magnetism could cause something that scientists thought was impossible, then why not a magnetism-induced nova event also? Our sun is a really big ball of magnetic energy. And that magnetism is not as stable as we would like. More importantly, we are seeing a lot of stars that are also highly magnetic and not very stable. And we are seeing too many stars flash brightly and then disappear behind a cloud of dust. Micronova. Unless someone can come along with a better explanation, it appears that Isaiah and Revelation are describing a nova event. Some might claim that this could be a kind of solar volcano that would eject a massive amount of dust out into the solar system, and I'd be happy with that explanation were it not for other passages in the Bible that describe a massive civilization-destroying EMP effect and a global earthquake that knocks down every tall building around the world. Looking for stars that disappear is a fairly new thing for astronomers. It takes a lot of effort and big budgets. But it seems that they are trying to get a grasp on which stars do this and why. Again, they want to find aliens. But until they discover some other reason, I will use this term, micronova. I didn't coin the term, and I certainly wasn't the first to raise the possibility of a small nova event occurring in our future. The guy who gave us this term is Doug Voigt. Ben Davidson picked up on his theories and expanded them. Doug and Ben are not scientists, but they have noticed evidence indicating that something really big happened a few thousand years ago. they think that it was a nova small enough to be called a micronova. And when I look at what the Bible says, I think that they're right. So until better evidence comes along, micronova it is. So how would such a micronova occur? Most scientists claim that gravity, or the buildup of dust on the surface of a star, as the only way to create a nova event. And they shake their head at the sheer impossibility of a magnetically induced nova event happening. Astronomers have had their heads stuck in gravity for so long that their brains got mushed. But a few solar physicists understand magnetism and plasma physics. So there's some hope that we'll eventually get a coherent and scientific explanation of how this could happen. Just as solar flares are caused by loops of magnetic energy on the surface of the sun, lots and lots of loops of such magnetic energy could cause a micronova. It would need to be a ginormous amount of energy, and it would need to be over a vast area of the sun's surface, and we would probably see it happening. Giant sunspots covering a vast part of the sun might make the sun look like sackcloth of hair. As this magnetic energy accumulated, the sun's surface would become more and more distorted until the energy could not be contained any longer. Think of it like a spring that gets wound tighter and tighter until it explodes outward in a flash of energy and dust. Great loops of magnetism and plasma will grow out of the sun's surface. They will get bigger and multiply around the sun. Then one of those loops will suffer a magnetic reconnection, causing a cascade of eruptions rippling around the sun in seconds. The sun will increase in brightness to 700% of normal, and a shell of solar dust will billow outwards. Ben Davidson also believes that this will either be a magnetic event or the result of our sun moving through an interstellar dust cloud. He points to the geologic record, evidence on the moon, and historical records to show that this has already happened, and will do so again. He believes that the main trigger will be something that he calls the galactic current sheet, which astronomers call the galactic magnetic field, or GMF. Will the interaction between our sun's magnetic field and the GMF trigger a nova event? It's hard to say. The magnetic field of our galaxy doesn't seem strong enough to cause our sun to initiate a small nova, but since there's a lot about our star's magnetism that we do not understand, it's hard to discount what Ben is saying. But the initial trigger doesn't matter. What matters is that God will cause this explosion on the sun. We will always have more questions than answers over how this event occurs, but there cannot be any question over why and who. Glass on the Moon. Then we have one tiny bit of evidence of a previous solar event that was so powerful that it melted part of the surface of the moon, turning it into glass. Unfortunately, this evidence is obscured by glass formed by lava flows on the moon and the impact heating from meteor strikes. Furthermore, we have only spent a very, very small amount of time on the moon, and we're only able to cover a tiny area where the Apollo missions landed. The one bit of evidence that we have comes from a report on the Apollo 11 mission by Dr. Thomas Gold, who was the director of the Center for Radiophysics and Space Research at Cornell University. He had proposed a special camera for the astronauts to use for taking close-up images of lunar soil. 17 pictures were taken with this special camera, and one or more of them immediately grabbed Dr. Gold's attention. Quote, "One of those is outstanding in being wholly unexpected and possibly of consequence not only to lunar geology, but also to aspects of the study of the sun, the Earth, and other bodies of the solar system." Close quote. That quote and the ones that follow come from Apollo 11 observations of a remarkable glazing phenomenon on the lunar surface, pages 193 to 197, the Apollo 11 Preliminary Science Report, NASA SP-214. Dr. Gold went on to describe five possible reasons for how the glass in that photograph was formed, but the most logical reason was the most chilling. Quote, Among the interpretations discussed here, only radiative heating seems to be able to account for the major observational data, and it accounts well for both the distribution over the ground and the detailed geometrical arrangements in which the glazing is found, for it is in just those places that the temperature would be expected to be at a maximum. We must therefore seek clues as to the nature of such a flash of radiation. The time of occurrence of the flash heating would have to have been sufficiently recent for micrometeorites not to have destroyed the glaze, nor for the mechanisms that redistribute the lunar soil to have blanketed the objects. Estimates of the micrometeorite rate at the present time vary considerably, but it seems very unlikely that the glaze could be maintained on the surface for as much as 100,000 years and probably not more than 30,000. The event in question would thus have to have taken place within this geologically very recent past. Several possibilities have to be discussed. Close quote. He then looks into what kind of radiative heating could explain what was in that picture. Quote, the flash heating, if it originated from the sun overhead at the time in the lunar region and flared up for a period between 10 and 100 seconds to a luminosity of more than 100 times its present value, what could be the origin of such a flare-up? Solar flares, as they are known at the present time, only reach a total energy output of less than 10 to the 33 ergs. The quantity we are discussing here is at least 4 times 10 to the 36 ergs for an isotropic source, or 2 times 10 to the 36 ergs for a localized source on the sun that radiates into a hemisphere only. While it cannot be ruled out completely that flares of such an intensity could occur, we have no evidence in this regard, although some earlier speculations exist, reference 9-2. The phenomenon may not be in the nature of a flare, but in the nature of a very minor nova-like outburst of the sun. The nova phenomenon among the stars is not understood, but it is normally concerned with a different class of star, and the intensity of the outburst up to 100 times the normal luminosity for a period of only tens of seconds every few tens of thousands of years would be a phenomenon that would not have been recognized astronomically among stars of the solar type. One can therefore not completely rule out the possibility that stars like the Sun do have occasional instabilities of internal origin, but very much weaker than the novae. Close quote. I find it ironic that 40 years later, Dr. Shibata would have discovered that our sun actually does emit solar flares stronger than 2 times 10 to the 36 ergs. Unfortunately, scientists at the time didn't think that such flaring could occur on our sun, and this is probably part of the reason why Dr. Gold's observations were shouted down. Dr. Gold died in 2004, 8 years before a study would be published showing that such solar events are inevitable. I'm betting that if we sent probes to the moon looking for evidence of a nova event from our sun, we'd find it. But I'm afraid that scientists are more interested in finding aliens or building lunar bases. They do not want to look for evidence of civilization-destroying solar events, but they might find them by accident. So, there you have it. To me, the evidence is conclusive. Science and the Bible both point to an event in our future that will knock down what we think of as modern civilization. It will be the biggest solar event since the Great Flood, and life will never be the same again, at least for those who survive. Eventually, civilization will return, a global economy will reform, and the beast system that we currently live in will be resurrected by a man of fierce countenance that the Bible calls the Antichrist. However, we're not done yet. We've only covered what the sun will do. We now have to look at what will happen on Earth, and our next step will be to look at what happens when a solar electromagnetic pulse takes out all of our electric and electronic technology. Ezekiel's Fire, The Great Solar Cataclysm, Straight Out of Prophecy, by John Little. Copyright 2022, narrated by the author.